Chapter 16, 1717. I have noticed an anomaly. Many imperial records have come to deal very kindly with the Kryth Cluster insurrection. But praise is most often levelled at the Saviour Fleet, led by the arriving Astartes of the Blood Angels chapter, rather than the initial defence of any individual world. Critical eyes were most often cast at the dubious resistance put up by the Adeptus Mechanicus in the defence of its principal bastion in the Northern Hemisphere, Site 1717. Indeed, that site's survival is often entirely attributed to the instability of the archenemy's forces upon Kryth Prime, and the well-noted tendency of the traitor legions to fall upon one another at the slightest provocation. Entire mountains were hollowed out to make room for the blessed Titan foundries of the Legio Maledictus. Had the Despoilers' War been successful, these would have been a resource of overwhelming value, used, plundered, and stripped of their worth before the arriving Imperial fleet bestowed its infinite vengeance upon the accursed forces of the War Master. Those rugged mountainsides were thick with elite Mechanicus Scitarii, like lice in a beggar's hair. Arranging thousands of individual landings across the entire mountain range would have taken a great deal of time that remained unavailable to the Despoiler. At this stage, the War Master believed only weeks remained before the first Blood Angel battle barge would soar into the system to bring the God Emperor's justice. Abaddon, 1,000 curses upon his name, knew this from his own astropathic sources. Prisoners captured after the war confirmed this to us. Such foreknowledge is the only conceivable explanation for a massed surface landing on the plains before Site 1717's foothills. In essence, Abaddon cast his hordes planetside and hurled them at the front gates, as it were. I have heard it said that our greatest weapon against the arch-enemy is the foe's own nature. That may indeed be so. Fate was most certainly on the side of righteousness the day the Night Lords and Black Legion within the Kryth offensive turned against one another. No imperial record I have been able to trace details exactly why Abaddon's command over portions of his army broke so completely. Nor does it explain what, if anything, the forces of the archenemy sought to gain from their untimely division. If such internal conflict is down to anything more than the maddened behavior of tainted, once-human beasts, it is unlikely to ever come to light. Interrogator Reshlan Darrow, annotation in his pivotal work, Faces of the Despoiler. First Claw shuddered as one.
"Breaching atmosphere," Adamar said to the others within the confines of the drop pod. "1 minute."
"Why the rough deployment?" Sirian asked.
"Anti-air fire," Mercutian grumbled.
"This high? Not a chance."
"It's just a rough ride down," said Adamar. "Weather patterns, rising heat, high pressure. Stay focused, brothers."
"Blood," Uzas was mumbling. "Blood and skulls and souls for the Red King."
"Shut up," Adamar growled. "Shut up or I'll tear your head off, stuff it with frag grenades, and use it as the ugliest explosive ever made."
"He can't hear you," said Sirian. "Ignore him. He always does this."
"Blood for the Blood God."
Uzas's voice was thick and wet. He was salivating again, venomous drool coating his chin.
"Skulls for the..."
Talos slammed the palm of his hand on Uzas's helm, crashing the side of the helmet against the headrest of his brother's restraint throne.
"Shut up," he snapped. "Every mission, every battle, enough."
Uzas didn't react at all.
"See,"
Sirion said to Adamar. Adamar just nodded, his thoughts his own.
30 seconds!
This is not going to be easy, Mercutian said. Are we going in with the violators and the scourges of Quintus?
There to the east, Talos answered. Between us and the Black Legion. Just remember your targets. We break in, we kill the unit commanders as ordered, and we break out to our own lines.
20 seconds,
Adamar noted.
This is not about attrition, Talos said, repeating Malkarian's words at the briefing.
And we're dead if anyone tries to turn it into a fair fight.
10 seconds.
Kill and break away. Let Abaddon's mortal followers bleed for him.
Talos couldn't resist the grin that colored his words.
That's not our job.
It was a decent plan on the surface, but with obvious risks. The squads that volunteered for this across all of the traitor legions and renegade chapters were given poor odds of survival. In front of the Exalted and Malkarian, Talos had demanded First Claw be part of the assault. Like all troops, the Mechanicus's Skitarii, despite their training and augmentations, had proved time and again they suffered when severed from their battlefield leadership. The Warmaster's forces, seeking to capitalize on that potential weakness, hurled elite squads of Astartes into the war zones below, each unit tasked with the assassination of several Tech Adept commanders. First Claw's pod crashed to the earth, throwing soil skyward from its landing crater. With timed bursts, the walls slammed down to form ramps, and First Claw charged from their restraint thrones, bolters up and blazing as they ran out onto the plainsland, a vast plateau before the foothills of 1717's crag fortresses. Their pod had come down onto a battlefield in the middle of an enemy regiment. An ocean of foes writhed beyond the clearing dust of their downed pod. The distant figures of titans, a host of classes and patterns, dueled in the distance. The closest of the god machines was at least 2,000 meters away, a towering, enraged reaver, spraying the ground with immense firepower, and still it was huge beyond reckoning compared to the surrounding enemy. Instinctively, it drew the eyes. As the Astartes disembarked, weapons opening up, their vox calls to each other immediately took on a tone of amused desperation.
"Try not to die here, brothers," Mercutian muttered. "I'm in no spirits to look for another squad."
Sirion laid waste to 3 heavily augmented Tech Guard, bolts detonating in the flesh parts of their bodies and blowing them apart.
"This looked much easier on the hollow maps."
A brute with 4 mechanical extra arms rumbled towards him, waving a bizarre array of mining tools formed into weapons of war. Sirion dodged a drill the size of his leg as it powered past his head and rammed his gladius into the Skitarii's bawling mouth. The blade bit, sank in, and impaled the Skitarii's altered brain.
"I've got 0 confirmation of the first target," he said, holding back several more Tech Guard with full auto-bolter fire.
His aim was off, shaky and loose, hard to align his bolter with his targeting reticule.
The new arm.
A hasty surgery and a simple augmetic. It would need a great deal more reconstructive work before he was satisfied with its performance. Still, with these odds, it was impossible to miss. The ground was treacherous underfoot, rendered uneven by the bodies layering the plain. Their drop pod had killed a fair few of the enhanced Mechanicus soldiers when it hammered down into the heart of the regiment's formation. Those around the impact zone were still scattered and fighting to form a decent resistance to the enemy in their midst.
"Landing is never an exact science, eh?"
Adamar ended a brief duel with a Skitarii possessing treads instead of legs. He wrenched his combat blade from the creature's eye socket, launching at the next closest.
0 sighting of the main target.
Talos's attention kept flicking to his retinal display, keeping track of the squad's increasing spatial division.
"Zar," he voxed. No answer.
He spun as he lashed out with Aurum. The distance was bad. The blade's tip snicked through the throat of a looming tech guard behind him, instead of taking the head clean off.
Zah, answer me!
Talos kicked the staggering Skitari with the severed jugular away. Cycling through sight modes, he tried to get a clear view of his brothers through the mass melee.
North, came Zal's voice. Closer to the front line. I can't confirm. The fighting is densest there. I'm too far away for confirmation,
Adamar voxed back.
As am I, Talos cursed. Sirion, Mercutian.
Little busy,
Mercutian replied.
Too far,
breathed Sirion.
Can't see fighting.
Souls for the Soul Eater,
Uza screamed.
Skulls for the Skull Throne.
No one asked you.
Through a sea of stabbing drills, slashing blades, punching fists and cutting lasfire, Talos carved and gunned his way forward. Something impacted on the side of his helm. Anathema barked in that direction, ending whatever threat had been there. Aurum twisted to deflect a Skitari's two lashing machine arms. Talos thudded his ceramite boot into the chest of a tech guard to the right, caving in the warrior's armor and puncturing his lungs with broken ribs. Aurum flashed again in a vicious arc, cleaving through another tech guard's torso as Anathema roared three shells into the heads of three other Skitari. The downed tech guard, carved in two, flailed at Talos's legs with its remaining functional arm. The Night Lord stamped on the howling saw blade to smash it into uselessness and crushed the soldier's head a moment later.
I'm having a wonderful time,
Sirion voxed to him, breathless and sarcastic.
You and I both, Talos said, his teeth clenched.
He spared a half-second's glance in the direction of the monstrous Reaver. It was closer now, but only barely, siren horns wailing above the battlefield, a challenge or a warning to those underfoot. It dwarfed the defeated warhound by no small degree.
Traitors!
One of the attacking Skitari yelled.
Kill them!
Talos gunned him down with a bolt in the face and waded on. Uzas made the kill. The tech adept was called Rolamos, a name he'd chosen himself, and any name he'd been born with was forgotten long, long ago. He was, by the calculations of his own internal chronometers, 116 years of age. At least the few remaining flesh parts were. Close, so very close, was his ascension to perfection. Only 17% of his flawed mortal form remained. A glorious and worshipful 83% was iron, steel, bronze, and titanium, all consecrated and ritually thrice blessed daily in the name of the machine god. He hesitated to call himself a master of Skitari, not out of modesty, but out of private shame. His role was a vital one, certainly, and not without its honor. Yet a grim, too-human ache remained within his cranial cogitators. A master of what? Slave soldiers? He deserved better. He deserved more. Solace lay in deception, and shame could be quelled by the same deceit. Outwardly, he embraced his role, endlessly modifying his physical form so that he might wage war alongside his augmented warriors. He lied to his peers and fellow adepts. How they believed him, how they processed and chattered confirmation for his apparent scholarly focus within the physicality of frontline tactical battle immersion. Like the avatars of the machine god that they were, the great engines of Legio Maledictus strode across the plains, towering above Rolamos's own pedestrian, humble, insignificant accomplishments. Oftentimes he would ascend the gantries when only menials were present and run a mechadendrite across the armor of an inactive titan, his inner processors generating picts of himself working on a god machine, striving to bring forth the soul of the engine from its silent bulk. Tormented by his own position in the Legio's hierarchy, at least he hid his displeasure from the unblinking eyes of his more respected brethren. That was cold comfort, but enough to keep his shame hidden. It was no matter that this hierarchical deceit placed him within harm's way. His body was significantly enhanced to deal with the kind of threats faced by Tech Guard infantry, and he had no worries of sustaining personal harm. And yet, this deceit was one he came to regret in the final minutes of his life. They were dropping Astartes into his regiments. Astartes! Entire squads of them. A night dark drop pod lashed groundward, pounding into the plane some 511 meters from where he stood, deep within a phalanx of his favored Skitarii. Rolumos cogitated their allegiance. The winged skull symbol, the forks of lightning inscribed upon their armor, the immediate and total viciousness of their assault, bolters discharging and blades hewing into precious, augmented Skitarii flesh. Night Lords, this was not optimal. As Rolumos directed a greater number of his soldiers in the direction of this closest pod and its troublesome burden, the first regrets were just beginning to sink in. These regrets reached their peak and ended abruptly, exactly 7 minutes and 9 seconds later.
Kill!
Uzas voxed a first claw. He wasn't even out of breath.
Target slain!
Uzas raised Rolamos's metal head in one hand, like a primitive tribesman bearing the skull of a murdered foe. The tech guard around him shrank back as he howled.
Who's next? Sirion asked.
The others heard the pounding of weapons against his armor transmitted over the vox.
I'm already bored of this.
Skitarii, Captain Tigrith, Talos answered. Look for banners. For the north.
First Claw returned to the Covenant of Blood 9 hours later. Septimus and Octavia were waiting for them in the hangar bay, both mortals dressed in their Legion serf uniforms. The Thunderhawk bringing them back was Nightfall, one of the only other gunships still functional within 10th Company. Two other squads disembarked first. First Claw came last, and Octavia swore softly under her breath. Almost 10 hours of solid fighting at the front line had taken a clear toll. Sirion's arm was limp and unmoving, the hastily attached augmetic limb having given out hours before, under the relentless demands of battle. Zal's collection of skulls hanging from his armor was reduced to no more than scarce fragments of bone dangling on a few remaining chains. Uzas and Mercutian both bore horrendous damage to their battle armor. Lasburns had carved blackened furrows through the ceramite, or burned it black on deflected impact. Huge axes and chain blades had chopped the images of their edges into the dark plate elsewhere. Adamar was bareheaded, his face decorated with bloody cuts, already scabbed and sealing with his enhanced physiology. Talos was the last to leave the Thunderhawk. The defiled Imperial Eagle upon his chest piece sported some intriguing new desecrations. One wing was now severed by a blade's impact, unjoined to the rest of the image, and the eagle's ivory-white body was black, charred by a flame weapon, was Septimus's guess. Talos's right hand was locked into a curled claw, rigid and unmoving. Evidently, the gauntlet had finally failed and would need a great deal of care in its repair. Septimus noticed two things immediately, the first of which was how much effort it was going to take to repair Talos's armor. The second made his blood run cold.
"Where's his gun?"
Octavia asked. She'd noticed it too.
"I lost it," Talos said as First Claw strode past.
"Lord, where are you going?" Septimus said.
"To see the Tech Priest and the 10th Captain."
Deltrian attended to Malkarion personally. The damage he'd sustained in the desecration of the Hall of Remembrance was almost fully repaired, though several joint motors within his upper body were still functioning at half capacity, their systems untested at full power. Although it wounded him with secret shame to adopt such a human reaction to his injuries, he cursed Vral each time his diminished physical aptitude caused an adjustment in his motion and movement. The tech adept and several of his servitors worked on the dreadnought's hull, resealing, repairing, amending, and reshaping. The Hall of Remembrance echoed with the sounds of maintenance. Talos had greeted Deltrian formally upon entering, but quickly lapsed into vox conversation with the ancient warrior.
"Forgive me for the rudeness, tech priest," the Astartes said, replacing his helm back over his head. "It is necessary if we are to speak over the noise."
Deltrian had bowed in response. The sounds of holy maintenance were loud by necessity. Through such song was praise offered to the machine god.
"Captain," Talos voxed.
"Captain, no longer. Speak, soul hunter.
The plains are ours.
A fine landing site they shall make. The siege begins with the dawn.
It will be close. Even if we take the city within the week..."
Talos trailed off. Malkarion knew as well as he did. Time was not their ally. The Blood Angels were less than 3 weeks away.
"Abaddon's seers are still sure, are they not?"
Talos snorted.
"I heard from his own lips that they are failing him all too often these nights."
"Then why does he trust them?"
Irritation and doubt, Talos realized with a jolt of unease, had crept into Malkarion's vox tone. He was a warrior from an age when almost no psychic tolerance pervaded the legions. Such abominations were either barred from loyal service or strictly trained and regulated, not relied upon as part of a war's planning.
"He works with what he has. In this case, astropaths across the fleet confirm it."
"Does Christian agree?"
"Christian is dead, sir. Slain 60 years ago. We have not had an astropath on board since."
"For the best, perhaps. Psykers, they are deviants and not to be trusted."
"The astropaths aboard Hunter's Premonition align their predictions with the War Master's own. The relief fleet is still weeks away."
"Ha! How was your first battle, sir?"
Malkarion had already answered this question several times. Upon his own return to the Covenant, visitors from several squads came to pay their respects and speak about the surface conflict.
"Glorious, brother. The splash of blood against my armor. The exultation of ending a legion of lives with cannon and fist. It will be a great triumph when we take this world in our father's name."
Talos smiled, barely.
"Now tell me the truth."
The servitors attending Malkarion paused momentarily as the dreadnought made a gear-shifting grind of a sound.
"Joyless. Passionless. Lifeless."
"Are you angry at me for waking you?"
"Were I angry, brother, you would already be dead. I would erase you from my sight the way I annihilated that Atramentar bastard Vral. I never liked him."
"No one did."
"I do not understand what is needed of me. That is all."
Talos considered this for a moment.
"Do you realize how you sound to me, sir? To all of us? How your voice hangs in the air, like the echo of thunder, and stampedes across the vox?"
"I am not obtuse, boy. I am not blind to this form's inspirational qualities. But I am dead, Talos. That is the truth. And it will tell
in the end. Tonight was a fine victory, not a life lost. We make planetfall again in 3 hours. Dawn will see the Mountain Fortress Foundry breached. And I will pretend to care, brother. Have no fear. I heard how you rallied 9th and 10th claws on the field of battle. All I did was kill for hours and bellow at the enemy.
Another grinding sound clunked from the depths of the dreadnought. What was that?
My auto-loader cycling, Malkarian lied.
It had been how his behemoth body translated a chuckle.
Now dispense with the formalities, soul hunter.
I could live without you calling me that, sir.
And you think I am inclined to agree with your desires? I am Malkarian the Reborn, and you are an apothecary with delusions of command.
Point made, Talos smiled.
Enough foolishness. Why are you here? What troubles you?
I lost my bolter.
Ha! Have mine.
Have mine? Talos laughed. With such great reverence, you treat legion relics.
I certainly don't need it any more.
The war machine raised and lowered its twin-barreled autocannon. Two servitors working on the barrels emitted error sounds from throat foxes as their work was interrupted.
Sorry,
the dreadnought boomed in its true voice. Deltrian bowed, reaper-like and sinuous.
All is well, Lord.
Fine,
Malkarian spoke into the vox again.
Get on with it, Talos.
I had a vision, sir.
This is hardly remarkable to me.
This one was different. It is wrong. Some of it, at least. It's not coming true. Right from the first moment I woke from it, everything within the images felt unlikely. It felt like a lie uncoiling inside my mind. Uzas of First Claw, killing Sirion. And now, as the planet stands on the very precipice of being conquered, I wonder at the rest of the vision.
Faroven has not died as I dreamed he would. Are you so certain these events must take place on Krythe?
I was, Talos admitted. Now I am unsure they will take place at all. I look at so many of our brothers, even Sirion and Uzas. I fear their taint has spread to me. Could my second sight be corrupted by exposure to the ruinous powers?
How many visions have you suffered? Are they as frequent as they were before my entombment?
More than before. They grow more frequent.
Maybe he will die on Krythe. Maybe he will die later. Maybe he will not die in the manner you have foreseen, and you worry over nothing. I don't recall you whining this much in the past.
Whining? Sir,
even the Primarch's visions were nebulous at times. Vague, he would say. Clouded. What right do you have to claim infallibility when even our gene father's second sight was imperfect?
Wait, wait!
Talos stared up at the giant machine, his vision colored killing red. The image of Malkarian in life, clutching those three helms, stared back at him.
Our father's dreams, Talos whispered, were sometimes wrong?
The virtue of such dreams is sometimes in the symbolism.
This cannot be true.
No,
This is why you always bred enemies within our ranks, brother. A legion is a hive of 1,000,000 secrets. You, Soul Hunter, have always assumed you knew everything. I always liked that about you. Liked your confidence. Not everyone felt the same.
Did the Gene Sire ever speak of me?
Only to tell me why you were named as you were. I laughed. I thought our father joked at my expense. It seemed so unlikely that anyone would disobey his final order.
Malkarion made the strange gear-changing growl again.
Least of all, you.